Chelek Yud Daled, Parshas Dvarim, Sicha Aleph. How amazing to be starting Chumash Dvarim together. The uniqueness of Sefer Dvarim is that it was said by Moshe and incorporated into Torah as Dvar Hashem. Sefer Dvarim consists of three sermons that were delivered by Moshe. The first reviews the period of 40 years of wandering in the Midbar, and the events that took place. And it's in our Parsha, in Parshas Devarim, in our Sicha, that we learn a very moving lesson about leadership and the relationship a shepherd, a Nasi, has to his flock, reflecting the relationship that Hashem has with us, his children, and his nation. Our Sicha is based upon Pasuk Aleph, and the first Rashi in Parshas Dvarim. The Pasuk reads as follows, Eile ha-dvarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Israel, be'ever ha-yardin, on the other side of the Jordan, ba-midbar, in the desert, ba-arava, in the plains, mul suf, against or beside the sea, Bein Paran ubein Teufel, between Paran and Teufel, v'lovan and Lovan, v'chatzeres and chatzeres, v'dizahav and dizahav. That's a very large number of places to be speaking from. And so Rashi immediately explains the words, Eile hadvarim, these are the words, and says, since the words, Eile hadvarim, are words of rebuke. Instead, in order to respect the nation, instead of mentioning all the incidents of transgression, Moshe alludes to the events by just mentioning the places where they transpired. Rashi then brings the names of these places, as they're mentioned in the Pasuk, and which transgressions Moshe is alluding to that occurred in these places. So, Bamidbar is when they angered God in the desert and complained there. Ba'arava, in the plain, was when they sinned with the Baal Pa'or, with the Avodah Zarah, with the idol worship of the Pa'or, in the plains of Moab, and so on. The Rebbe particularly looks at the last reference of Rashi, that Rashi makes to Dizahav, explained as follows in the words of Rashi, Hoychichon al ha'egel she'asu bishvil roiv zahav she'hayalohem. That Moshe rebuked them for the golden calf they made because of the abundance of gold they had. Rashi continues, Sheneemar, and he quotes, like it says in Hosea, V'kesef her beisila, V'zahav asu lebaal. I gave her a lot of silver and gold, and they used it to make an idol. Though, says the Rebbe, Rashi prefaced his entire explanation on this pasuk, saying that these places are all listed to allude to rather than point out the actual sins committed, when it comes to explaining Dizav, Rashi again says, Moshe rebuked them, and this time for the egel. It seems that the reason Rashi brings up the idea once again that they're being rebuked is because Dizav isn't mentioned in the pasuk, in the verse, as an actual place. That's not the intention in the pasuk. In other words, like the other places, a place referenced where the negative behavior happened. Rather, Dizav is in fact a concealed reference to the sin of the Egel HaZahav, the golden calf. Similarly, says the Rebbe in the same Pasuk, these two places called Teufel and Lavan, or Teufel and Lavan. These two places called Teufel and Lavan aren't really places. Lavan refers to the mun, which was white, and Teufel, the Lavan, means they belittled and denigrated the mun by complaining that they were tired of it. But nowhere in Torah is there a place called Dizahav, just as the words Teufel v'Lavan are not found anywhere in Torah to refer to a place. But why, asks the Rebbe, does Rashi not explain Dizahav as a place? A place with this name because they use the gold there wrongly. There are several references in Torah to places that are called by their name because of something that took place there. For example, in Parsha Shlach, the Torah tells us the Meraglim went down to Nahal Eshkol, but there in the very same Pasuk it says that Nahal Eshkol was called such because they cut a cluster of grapes there to bring back to Moshe and Bnei Yisrael. Eshkol means cluster. They were in a valley of a cluster. And a mention of the name of a place only once in Torah is really not that unusual. What about Teufel v'Lavan? There too, Rashi says, these are not places, but references to the foolish denigration, the Teufel, of the Mun, the Lavan. But Di Zahav is actually different to Teufel v'Lavan, says the Rebbe. With Teufel v'Lavan, a description of Lavan as a reference to Mun is a very indirect reference. It doesn't touch on the sin at all. And the word Teufel, brought separately from Lavan in the Pasuk, because the words are separated with a Vav, Teufel v'Lavan, separated as it is in that way, from the word Lavan, it means only a place where they denigrated. Separated from Lavan and standing alone, it doesn't mean the place where they denigrated the whiteness, the Lavan, the Mun. Just that they denigrated, which is what they did as they sinned. That's the whole reason for the Teichacha, the denigration of certain things by the nation. The usage of these two words individually indicates that these two are not names of places. They're rather a direct, indirect rebuke. And thus Rashi brings down the words and explains that these are direct references to the negative actions. But in the name Di Zahav, there's a very direct reference, seemingly, to the sin itself and the reason for it. They had vast amounts of gold. So why can't we assume that it's actually a reference to a place called Di Zahav, called by this name for the obvious sin connected to this name? Why does Rashi say this is a Teichacha and not it's the name of a place that references or reminds us of a particular sin that was done there, like Bamidbar? The Rebbe asks yet another question. Reference to this sin of the Egel and this reason for it, the overabundance of gold that Hashem gave, is mentioned already in Parshas Kisisa, where Moshe is asking for atonement for Bnei Yisrael. He begs for forgiveness for Bnei Yisrael. Why doesn't Rashi bring the reference from Hosea in that case, in Parshas Kisisa, where Moshe is begging for forgiveness for us? This reference of Kesef, Hirbeisila, V'Zahav Asula Baal, that I gave her a lot of gold or a lot of silver, and she used the gold and the silver or the gold to make an idol, why doesn't Rashi bring it there along with his other answer there? That it's you, God, who caused them to sin by giving them so much. Wouldn't it have been right to bring this the first time this sin is mentioned? The Rebbe explains all of these questions in the following way. In Parshas Kisisa, Rashi is explaining the surprising way in which Moshe expresses himself in the Pasuk. In Kisisa, in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Moshe says, This nation sinned with a terrible sin, making a god of gold for themselves. And it's so surprising because he follows with this with a request for Hashem's forgiveness. Why would one begin a request for forgiveness by prefacing the disastrous sin that was committed? And so Rashi explains that while this was a terrible sin, it was the gold that Moshe's emphasizing in the pasuk. Vayasu lahem elokei zahav. They made themselves, Moshe says, a god of gold. That's what made them sin. And where did they get this gold? You, God, gave it to them. Thus, Moshe was attempting to diminish the sin by explaining that this really was not about the, what was just about the overabundance of gold. They weren't trying to deny God. Really, Moshe was being melamed zchus. He was finding justification for his beloved nation. In Kisisa, Moshe was begging for forgiveness. But here, in Shlach, something else entirely seems to be going on. Here, Rashi says Moshe is rebuking Bnei Yisrael for this terrible sin. It's about the rebuke, about the Teichacha. And so in Parshas Kisisa, Rashi could not have brought the quote from Eshaya because it points to the largesse of God, the extravagance, the givingness of God, what Hashem gave them. This certainly would not have been what Moshe wanted to say and to remind Hashem about in pleading for the lives of his flock. But here in Shlach, where Moshe seeks to rebuke, it's appropriate to bring that pasuk. And so, because of all this, it's clear that Dizahav can't be explained as a place, because Moshe's usage of this idea that they had too much gold is only to diminish the sin in Parshas Kisisa. In other words, the access they had to too much gold is really only secondary to the sin itself. It's not the reason why they sinned. It's what they used, true, but certainly not why they sinned. They sinned because they saw that Moshe was delayed in descending from the mountain. Thus, it's not likely to say that a place is called Dizav when it only reflects a detail or even reflects a detail that diminishes the severity of the sin when Moshe wants to chastise them for the sin. So he won't be reminding them of a place called Dizav when it doesn't really tell them about the sin itself at all. Yet, says the Rebbe, while we understand this, it still doesn't explain the terminology Rashi uses. If Moshe wants to rebuke them, it seems that Rashi should have said Moshe was berating them and rebuking them for the egel, the calf, which they made with the gold they had, not because of the gold they had, as Rashi actually says, Bishvil Roiv Zahav, because of the abundance of gold. Bishvil seems to be putting the blame on the gold again, just like Moshe did in Kisisa. And indeed, says the Rebbe, it is so. Rashi begins his explanation on this pasuk saying quite clearly, Moshe wanted to protect the honor of his nation, and so he concealed the rebuke, even though he wanted to rebuke them. And it's for this very reason, to protect the honor of Bnei Yisrael, of his flock, that Moshe brings up Dizav, too much gold given to them by God. Rashi is hinting to Moshe's desire to protect the honor of the nation, which he referenced immediately at the beginning of his explanation. And thus he says, Bishvil Hazav, because of the gold. This indication that Rashi gives to the fact that Moshe wants to protect the honor of his nation, as it's alluded to in Rashi's words on Dizahav, should be observed in all of the Teichacha, all the words of rebuke throughout the first Pasuk of Devarim. And indeed, the Rebbe shows us how it is. The place mentioned as Bamidbar, Eila Hadvarim, in the words of Rashi, Eila Hadvarim, or the words of the Pasuk, excuse me, Eila Hadvarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael Be'Ever HaYarden Bamidbar. These are the things that Moshe said to all of Israel on the other side of the Jordan in the desert, tells us that we can be matzdik. We can justify their complaint. A desert is, after all, a frightening place, full of snakes and serpents and scorpions. And it's void of water. That makes the desert a really tough place to be in. And it's not that difficult to understand their complaints and fears of dying of starvation in the desert. Looking at the next word, Ba'arava, Eila Hadvarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael Be'Ever HaYarden Bamidbar Ba'arava, in the plain, Rashi explains, Bishvil Ha'arava. Here it is again, Bishvil, because of the plain. Shechatu Be'Baal Pe'or, where they had sinned worshipping the idol Pe'or. At Shittim, in the plains of Moav. In fact, Arvais Moav, the plains of Moav, was from Beit HaYishimot to Abel Shittim, according to Torah. But by saying because of the Arava, as though to say that well-known Arava, which is where, who lived there, were the Moavim, the nation, whose birth was from the immodest daughter of Lot, who said openly that her son Moav was a product of her incestuous relationship with her own father. This was a lack of modesty that continued into her descendants, into the nation of Moav. And so, pointing to the Arava, the plain, the infamous plain of the infamously immodest nation of Moav, again, deflected, so to speak, the guilt of the sin, which was a sin that occurred only after the immodest behavior displayed by the women of Moav, who seduced the men of Bnei Yisrael and then encouraged them to serve the idol Peor. Because they were in Moavi territory, and the Nisayan, the test, was then that much greater not to sin. Rashi continues this with the words Mulsuf, when they rebelled against God at the shore of the Yamsuf by saying, were there not enough graves in Egypt that we had to come here to die? And also, when they traveled away from the Yamsuf, they were rebellious against God there too. And Moshe had to force them to leave the shore of the Yamsuf. And here too, Rashi finds, so to speak, an excuse for this rebellion. There was no natural way, as they stood facing the sea, to survive a watery death. Behind them were the Egyptians, before them a raging sea. What should they have felt? And once they crossed safely, and Hashem instructed them to gather the spoils that rose up to the surface, the incredible fortune of gemstones that the chariots of the now drowned Egyptians had been bedecked with, when Hashem said it's now time to go, they weren't ready to leave this wealth behind. Again, this was by God's own instruction, and thus this rebellion too could be placed squarely in Hashem's lap. Rashi then explains Bein Paran as what they did in the desert of Paran through the Meraglim. This is a reference to the sin of those who cried out against God in response to the frightening report the Meraglim brought back about Eretz Yisrael. Rashi could have said simply and in brief, Bechet HaMeraglim. This was rebuke for what they did at the time of the sin of the Meraglim. But Rashi phrases it as Al Yedei HaMeraglim, through the Meraglim, saying if not for the Meraglim bringing this report, they would have never, never responded the way that they did. And now we come to Rashi's explanation on Bein Teufel v'Lavan. They belittled the mun, which was white. White indicates colorlessness. It's a color that brings no pleasure. Thus, they were complaining because food, by nature, should give a human being some pleasure. But the white stuff gave them no tanug, no pleasure. And again, an excusable, or at least understandable, reason to complain. The Chatzeres is the next place in the Pasuk that Moshe mentions. And Rashi explains this place as the place b'machlokaisei shel Korach, where Korach made his machlokes, his uprising. Weren't there a lot more people involved in Korach's uprising? But yet again, Rashi is pointing out that Moshe continues to honor his nation in this way. It was just Korach's uprising, not the rest of the nation. Korach seduced them to join him. And if you recall, we studied a sicha in Parshas Korach on this very idea, where Moshe says to Hashem, one man sins and you'll be angered against an entire people. There too the lesson was Moshe's love for Bnei Yisrael and his desire to find them meritorious. The Rebbe concludes this beautiful sicha saying that Parshas Dvarim is read always the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, or on a Shabbos that is actually Tisha B'Av, which too is relevant to our entire discussion. This time of Bein HaMetzarim, the difficult time of the 3 weeks, is in itself rebuke to our people. And so Rashi teaches us, first and foremost, that Hashem is so careful with us and with our honor. How do we see this? The purpose of our exile is only so that we can experience an aliyah, an elevation, an opportunity for growth, and for true fulfillment of our vast potential. This is expressed in our reality in the very first words of Eicha, which we read on Tisha B'Av. These words of lamentation begin, says the Rebbe, with words of hidden praise. Eicha yashva badad. Oh, how she sits alone, we read. And these words, says the Rebbe, are words of praise for our nation. Though hidden in the lamentations, describing the destruction of our precious Beis HaMikdash. For sitting alone is in fact a virtue. Not becoming mixed into the multitude of nations we live amongst. Like oil, reads the Medrash and Medrash Rabbah, does not become merged with other things. It separates, it even isolates, and it stands apart. It is in this merit of this virtue that we will be redeemed, and that the glory of the Jewish nation will be fully revealed, says the Rebbe, with the rebuilding of the third Beis HaMikdash. May it be built speedily in our times and now.